While we're waiting to get some of our technical difficulties taken care of, I'm going to begin the session. I'm Roy Schmidt. I am the moderator for this session. This is session 326, titled Encircle, Finding Community in Unexpected Places. If you weren't expecting to be in the Encircle lecture, you're in the wrong place. And you can either stay or leave at your option.
This is an app.
Okay. Before we begin, we do have a few announcements. We ask that if you have a cell phone with you, that you either turn it off or put it on vibrate, because typically what happens is we're right in the middle of the presentation and somebody's phone rings, and every once in a while, it's mine. The session is being recorded, and you will be able to purchase a copy or a download of the session right after at the check-in booth up in front. This session is 60 minutes long, and we will need to vacate the premises by 11:15, and part of my job is to keep an eye on time. If you haven't already done so, we would ask you to please consider subscribing to Sunstone Magazine, and you could do that at the registration desk, too. Encircle is an LGBTQ plus family and youth resource center, builds homes in conservative communities to create change in conversations. It develops and implements data-driven programs designed to foster connection between our LGBTQ plus youth, their families, and the community. This presentation will discuss the origins of Encircle, current evaluations of its work, and its future. Stephanie Larson is the founder of Encircle LGBTQ Family Youth Resource Center. She was recognized at the 2017, shows you how old I am, Human Rights Campaign Awards, and at the 2018 Sundance Film Festival, and named one of 11 upstanders by Starbucks Coffee. She has appeared on the Today Show and Encircle, has been featured on NBC News and the Huffington Post. Jordan Scrow has a BS in psychology, managed multiple research labs, and published in a variety of manuscripts regarding relationship satisfaction, genetics, and health behavior. She is the chief program officer at Encircle, where her responsibilities include program development, implementation, and evaluation. And I forgot one announcement. Let me do that. During lunch, from 12:30 to 2 o'clock, signature book authors will be signing copies of their books, all of which are available for Benchmark books. Tables are set up near the Benchmark concourse. Gary Ruggiero, Confessions of Mormon Historian, The Diaries of Leonard Arrington, Stephen Carter, Moth and Rust, Mormon Encounters with Death, Deja Early to Mormon Newlyweds Who Thought the Belly Button Was Somehow Involved, D. Michael Quinn, The Mormon Hierarchy, Wealth, and Corporate Power, and finally, Daniel Stone, who has a new biography of William Bickerton out, Forgotten Latter-day Prophet. After the presentations are made, we will typically have a little bit of time for questions and answers. Because this is being recorded, if you have a question, we ask that you come to the microphone and ask your question into the mic so it will be included on the So, with no further ado, Jordan, are you up or Stephanie?
Well, we're doing it together. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for being here. My name is Stephanie Larson. I know a lot of you as good friends, and it's fun to have you here. And a few of you get to hear our story all over again, but grateful you're here.
I'm Jordan. Like I said, I'm the Chief Program Officer at Mandarin.
Before we dive into Encircle and what we do at Encircle and why we do what we do at Encircle, we thought we would just give you a little background on who we are and how we ended up on the stage. I grew up in Orem. My parents were Jack Mormons. They weren't even Sunstorm Mormons, so they sent us to church thinking that would be good for us, that it would help us be part of our community. And I thought that if my parents were obedient, they wouldn't fight anymore. And I knew if I had a priesthood in my home, that everything would be okay for me someday.
I grew up also in a really, really active LDS family, and I kind of learned from a young age that you don't think for yourself. I was told kind of who to be, what to do, what would bring me happiness and success. So I was kind of like pretending to be the perfect kid, team captain of every sport, super active in the church. I graduated valedictorian, and then I went to BYU.
Jordan forgot to throw in she was valedictorian. I was not, but I did go to BYU for 7 years. And there I was this kind of a sponge. I soaked everything in, and I loved the rules. I loved everything about it. When I left BYU law school, I was going into family law, and I would have told you that if gay marriage ever happened in our country, it would destroy everything. I thought homosexuality was a sin.
So when I got to BYU, I started to feel very, very isolated and alone and depressed, but I couldn't really put words to it. I didn't really understand what was happening for me. So I just started listening to what my mom was saying and what my bishops were saying, which was, get married. Get married and all of your problems will go away, and you will be super, super happy. So that's what I did. I got married to a man in the temple. And before I got married to this man, I started to understand a little bit of my sexuality. Maybe I might be gay, but no, not really. I actually showed my mom the USGA video. If any of you guys did, it's called It Gets Better. It was the first video ever. I didn't even know why I wanted to watch it or why I loved it. I couldn't even put words to it. I showed my mom, and the first thing she said to me was, "Ew, that's gross. Turn it off." So I turned it off, and I was like, "Okay, great. Yep, never talking about it again, thanks." So I get married in the temple, and
I left BYU, and after all those years leaving unmarried, I knew something was wrong with me. But eventually, I got married in Washington, D.C. to Mitch. And that is when a couple of things started changing my life and my worldviews. First of all, living in D.C. for the first time ever in my life, living outside of Utah County, I realized that Gentiles weren't so bad. There were a lot of people out there doing really great things who were Mormon. My Mormon brain didn't expect that. I also met John Williams, and that was one of the biggest game changers in my life.
So, meanwhile, as my marriage is progressing, I start to feel like I have these two choices, right? I could either end my own life because I was in so much pain, or I could just stay married forever, for the rest of my life, and never be happy. So I start to understand maybe there's like a better option. Maybe I could do something for myself and leave my marriage and keep my health. So that's what I did. And it was extremely, extremely difficult. I felt like I had no family support. My mom and dad stayed easily my out by ending my marriage. Fast forward a little bit, and I meet my now wife. So I start to meet her, and I remember this one time. It was like I had this conversation with her. So we were talking about grasping, because in my family, you know, you do this, 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 and that's what I was trained to do. So I'm talking with her, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to go to grasping. What if I don't? What if I end up never doing anything really, really great with my life? Would you still like me? What would I do? And she was like, I don't care what happens, because I love you, and I'm always going to be there. And in this moment, I'll never forget, I was like, wow, this is what it feels like. This is what people talk about. And then obviously never went back.
So I'm getting to know John Williams and his story, which was he grew up in Grace, Idaho in a Mormon family. He told me once that when he was in high school, he would have given anything not to be gay. He said he went on a Mormon mission hoping he could pray the gay away. But when he came back from his Mormon mission and he was still gay, he went to Utah State where he was suicidal. His older sister, Sam, Sandra realized what was going on, and he said that she saved his life by coming and picking him up and bringing him to Salt Lake City and taking care of him. John eventually came out to his family, and when he did, it wasn't an issue to him. He was still John. He was just part of who he was. And so John, I think because he did spend years trying to fix relationships with his family and trying to get them to accept him, John just got to move forward and become all John became. John became the first restorationist in Salt Lake City. He was nationally known. Our skyline's different today because he took those old pioneer buildings and he made them beautiful contemporary business spaces. John brought fresh seafood to Salt Lake City. He created 13 restaurants, which became the gastronomy restaurant group. But on a personal level, John was one of the kindest, most giving, generous person who thought every life mattered. And watching him day to day, give his parking lot attendants enough money to go to college or quietly donate to local universities was amazing. And John was the center of his family. Everything was a part of him. He wanted to celebrate life. So, as a Mormon mom, I had six kids, just raising my kids for 17 years. We moved back to Utah, and Mitch and I started learning about the high suicide rates in our community. And then we also start learning that suicide for LGBTQ youth, they are 3 times more likely to commit suicide than their straight peers. So if you put that all together, the numbers are bad as suicide is, I start wondering, is really the greater problem the isolation, depression, and loneliness that these kids are experiencing? How many of them are able to come out, and how many of their parents know how to love and support them when they do come out? If statistically, the average youth realizes that they are LGBTQ at age 12. The average youth does not come out until 22, and I would argue in our Mormon community it's even later than that. But if you take that, you've got a 10-year period where the only person who knows that they are queer is that youth. And what are they hearing during that time in my community? It generally is impossible. You know, what their mother or their aunt, their pastor might be saying is usually shaming for them and leaves them possibly in suicide state. But we do know that families who love and accept their kids, they are 8 times less likely to commit suicide. They're 3 times less likely to get on drugs or to get involved in unsafe sex. So I finally called John and asked him, will you help me do something to help our LGBTQ youth in Provo? I think that there's anywhere in the country where it might be hard to be gay in Provo. So I go looking for a house, find this house across the street from the Provo Temple. The fact that it has rainbow windows built by a polygamist 125 years ago was my sign that this must be a house. So while we're renovating the house, we're trying to figure out, how do you fit into Provo? How do you become a real asset? How do you not push up against the community and be seen as something that's fighting? So the board works really hard over the 8 months that we're renovating and comes up with the mission of to embrace and sustain every LGBTQ youth, every family, and every community. That we are committed to no size, only love, and that through love we'll bring people together. We wanted, through the name Encircle, we want to expand our circles of love and expand the community's circles of love and who is the community.
Just really quick, I just wanted to tell you all what I first heard about Encircle. I was at this random event with my wife, and the man doing the event was like, and I'm going to have Stephanie Larson on stage. She's so like, she's like medium over, like not very comfortable. She's like, I think I'm going to like star. few months later, we're at Provo Pride, and she's in the booth there. And so I'm like, wow, this crazy lady actually made something amazing. So from then on, I just started volunteering, and then it just never worked.
And very quickly, it became clear that Jordan needed to be staffed. So we bring Jordan on, and the reason why Circle is working is because of the young queer individuals who are really running this place. Like, what they can do in 5 minutes, I can accomplish in a day, and it's been amazing to watch that and to see them create this phenomenon that it is. So we have the grand opening on Valentine's Day a year and a half ago. And I will say that since that time, it's like we have a little party in the house every day. And that's not an exaggeration. I like to believe that that's in honor of John. So I want to just, we have programs, we have what we call friendship circles, which is basically a support group that youth do not think that friendship circles are cool. So they're, or support groups are cool, but friendship circles are. And so we have friendship circles and we also have therapy. But I'm going to start by telling you about our programs, which are designed to have specific outcomes that specialize around fostering connection, creating safe spaces, and a sense of belonging, and giving the community a platform to find their voice and to find hope. All things that support our overall mission, which is to bring the family and the community together. So Elevate is the first program of the month. We do this on the first first Monday at 7, and the idea behind this is to give our youth role models and ideas of who they can be. You get a successful, thriving LGBTQ individual to stand up in this little house and tell their story of what their life and the principles that they live by that enable them to thrive. We take out all the furniture and we can pack about 70 people from the community in. And it's fun because we get everyone from all walks of life and people bring their families. And we hope that parents who are sitting there think, if my child ends up like this individual, they will be just fine. We also video a 3 to 5 minute video with the most important things that these individuals are teaching, and we get them online and out so that people who are not in our area, young folks all over the country and actually all over the world, will listen to that and find them.
So,
CERB
is another one of our programs. It's on the other Monday. What we find in particularly conservative communities and in women communities, service is a very, very important part of what we do, right? So this program is designed to reach the broad community. We have families come to this program, do service projects together. It's kind of like a family moment, service. But we've done really fun things with the Rape Recovery Center, other LGBT work in the area. Sometimes if a youth has just had a bad day, the service project is just
Lunch with Lisa is on Tuesdays at 12 before the house opens, and we hope to create a community for parents so that they have people to rely on and feel safe with to have some tough conversations. My friend Lisa Holmberg, whose son came out to her the day he got back from his morning mission, is the one who runs it. She just sits and laughs and has a great time with parents.
So this program is called Becoming. Just a fun fact about the circle. About two-thirds of our youth group that we have each week, those youth identify as trans or non-binary or gender fluid or gender queer. Some of you might not know, but I mean that means nothing. Basically, we noticed that this community though of kids really needed another space to talk about really hard things with people who have been experts in their field. So this program is every Tuesday, and it's particularly for the gender-varying community. The last Tuesday of the month, we invite the families to come together, talk about everything from hormone therapy to top surgery to how to talk to someone in the way you are transgender.
Tools to Thrive. We're trying to give these kids any tools we can to give them confidence and hope in life. We did this. We bring in experts from the community, and they'll talk about communication, resume building skills, vulnerability, meditation, safe sexuality, just, you know, anything that we think that they might enjoy. Most of these nights are full of college students from BYU, UVU, and they can be great.
So our Love Water Art series, Notes That Love Loud, is a program name. So this is one of our most popular programs. It happens right after the youth group, so a lot of kids will come on Wednesday, and they go to youth group, and they just stay all day to go to work. So we have local artists from all over Utah come and teach these kids everything from stained glass, we make leather journals, so many kids have handles. We've really done it all. And this speaks to a lot of the youth because they are so creative. So art is a really, really wonderful thing.
It's incredible to see the things that come out of the art room in the circle. It's really neat. Beyond is on Thursday night, and that's when people just bring their guitars, their violins, whatever it is, and they sit around the piano and just jam out. And that's another one that people from all walks of the community come to. And it's supposed to be 2 hours. It generally ends up going late into the night because people are having so much fun.
The Blue Sky is a program for folks who enjoy writing and expressing themselves that way. You'll notice that we sort of have a program for everyone. We have writing, we have music, we have art, we have a discussion-based workshop. We try to offer things where everybody would feel comfortable. So this is a program where folks come and they write poetry, they share it, or they don't share it, they just take it home, they can work on it throughout the week, and it's like a really lovely experience.
So this is Lisa Hansen. She's the first therapist that we ever had at In Circle, and she runs the program. Lisa is part of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. She's a marriage and family therapist out of BYU, and she's one of them, that's for sure. When we started out, we gave her these two rooms, and said we'll supplement the therapy so that it's very inexpensive. We have gone from just Lisa being our lone therapist to having 11 therapists in Provo. We have therapy going on in Salt Lake City and St. George while we're waiting for those houses to open. Lisa had a lot of people offering to come in to help her, and instead what she's been doing is training therapists who are in school so that they have a fresh perspective, and so that we have an army of really good therapists in the future. Of course, there's absolutely no form of reparative therapy done in a circle. In circle therapy is based on good mental health. We would love to support the individual, however, whatever good mental health is to them. And we are working with families as much as possible. I will say that in the 250 sessions we're doing per month at this little house, currently maybe 25 families will be involved in any of it. So getting parents in the door is one of our hardest struggles.
Just a note too, we've never turned anybody away from a therapy session because it's all subsidized. So it's free, 15, 35, and 70 years, so we can work with people. The Friendship Circle Steph mentioned a little bit, like she said, kids want to make friends, they don't want to go to a support group. And also there's this negative stigma that exists, I think, for everyone about what it means to go to a support group, like you're admitting something bad about yourself. So we just sort of like rip the stigma right off, and we embrace these kids when they come to their weekly friendship circle. We have friendship circles for everyone in the queer community. And although our demographic is 25 and younger that we serve, we have friendship circles for 21 plus, an adult trans friendship circle, a lesbian friendship circle. So we try to be as inclusive as possible. We have 11 per week, and we average, if you exclude the youth group, we average 20 people per week. If you include the youth group, they average closer to 105. So I'm just going to go through some numbers with you really quick, because I think they're super fun. Each month, we see about 730 people. We do over 200 to 250 therapy sessions, 35 evening programs, and 4 days of workshops. So we are constantly doing something, and we are always busy, and it's always chaos. So the question of, is it working? It's one thing to say, we have this wonderful house, we're offering all these great things, is it doing something for the community? Yes. And it 90% report feeling nutrition is essential to that individual getting them through their week and providing an emotional boost. So there's like this part at the end of all the surveys that I do, and it says, how do you feel about the circle? And it's an opportunity for a circle to grow, if there's feedback, or if you're positive experiences. These make me emotional. When people say, like, can you just be open to neutral center? I wish I could live here. This room means everything to me. It's just a clear testament that what we're doing is working. It's working for parents, it's working for LGBTQ students, it's working for BYU students, UPU students. It's really like a place where everyone can feel loved and accepted. So we onboard about 50 new people each week, and of all of our weekly guests, nearly 30%, and this is like an increasing number, have been back to the circle 21 times over the course of the week. A lot of our youth come every single day, and they like will circle the question. I saw the other day someone circled it and wrote, I can't even count, which is so important to me for us. So people really, really wish we were open to make this up. So
when before we opened, I thought we would. I wasn't sure how Provo was going to accept this little project. But we put, like, on Facebook, we did a renovation project, and we thought we'll get the community in to help us renovate. We have no money. People like Tripp and Sterling show up at Dean for 8 months for free to help renovate the house. Since that time, we've trained over 750 volunteers. On Saturdays, once a month, we do a 3.5 to 4 hour training session where we teach suicide prevention, you know, what do you do if somebody uses overdosing, what our circle period interacting with these kids are, and what our stance is, and what we expect the circle volunteers to help you put them to treat the kid and the parents who come in. I think that that's one of my favorite parts of the circle. To see people walk in who are new to even knowing about LGBTQ individuals, but wanting to understand and to change. I think the better conversations in the circle lead to better conversations at homes and in schools and in neighborhoods. And so that's where we're trying to just kind of slowly make our community safe for these kids. One of my favorite things that we do is we go around the room. Why are you here? Why would you want to be in a circle volunteer? And we just go around the room. And a lot of people will say, I have two children who are LGBTQ, or I've lost a child to suicide. We've had kids stand up and say, and come out right there in that space because they feel so safe. But one of my favorite examples was the time when we were going around the room, and this man says, I'm here because I am so mad at the Mormon Church. They are killing our youth. And I want to do something to change that. The next man says, well, I'm a Mormon bishop, and I need to understand this because I have youth in my ward who are gay, and I need to know what to say. And the next man sitting next to him says, well, I'm gay, but I'm a Mormon bishop. I'm like, wow. We got it all here, and it's awesome. But I think that that is why Encircle is working. Everyone who comes there agrees on one thing. These youth matter. Important and they're amazing, and we want to show them love and support. And they, all of our other differences go away, and we feel that love in each other. So what they do is they'll come in, our volunteers, they'll spend 2 hour shifts, and they're just there. Sometimes they're making cookies, helping with homework, others lead groups, and facilitate programs, and we're always having events, you know, sort of like today at Love Lab. There's all these people who are going to stand up and sell t-shirts all day.
So I'm just going to talk a little bit about our resources. I think it's important to understand that in Utah, it's very difficult for a queer person to find an affirming resource, right? It can
many of you will know Bill Bradshaw. Just, he's kind of a legend, I think, in the LGBTQ community. His son came out as gay, about 35 years ago. I actually grew up in Brett is his son's name. My mom was always saying to me, as a kid, you need to marry Brett Bradshaw somehow. Probably a good thing that that didn't work out, but Brett was my school's seminary president. He was Mr. Preferred 2 years in a row, AP on his mission. He comes home from his mission and goes to the University of Chicago his senior year. He comes home and tells his mom and dad, I am gay and I am in love with Brett. And Bill and Margie were just, I think, stunned, because he was also football, quarterback, basketball, you wouldn't have known by anything, I think, about him. But anyway, Bill and Margie were like, we never thought about this. It's never been part of our life. So they start doing research for, until today, doing research on what creates sexuality. Can sexuality be changed? Where does our gender identity come from? And I went to Bill, first of all, when I wanted to start in Circle. And actually, Kip and Sterling, I begged them to get me to lunch with him. And we went and sat down, and he eventually hands me this pamphlet and says, here's 40 years of research. I think he meant, he's been following across the world and whatnot. So then we begged Bill to take his research and dumb it down so that people like me can understand it and read the science. And what we're trying to do with these, we've got about five pamphlets now. One's by Greg Prince, the other one's Lisa Hansen, that we send home with parents or with kids to give to their parents, hoping that the parents might, in their own rooms, read these pamphlets and look at their child in a different way than maybe they've been told their entire life to see people who are queer. And, just grateful to people like Bill who have spent their lives really doing the hard work. And,
So all of these pamphlets, you can find online on our library page. You can just, read through them. We also will get them for free at all of our locations at the Circle. So originally we get to Salt Lake. We will have them there. Sometimes parents will come in and they'll say, I have friends who need to read this pamphlet. And we'll just be able to send them their way. So they've been really effective. They're saving a lot of time. And we're really grateful to people like Bill, who so this is just like a screenshot of what our website looks like. So if you just want to click on this and you can just click through it and read it. They're free. I already know what you're saying, but that's important. We also mail them out. So sometimes people will say, I read through this pamphlet, I would like to have some hard copies, but I don't live in Utah. So we'll wrap up packages and send them all over the country. So this is our resource list just that I was mentioning a little bit earlier. So we have everything from suicide prevention all the way down to local gay straight alliance clubs for high schools. So if a kid doesn't want to tell their mom, hey, I'm gay and I don't know if it's what I can't say or whatever, who should I talk to? They can go to our website and the name of their high school, so this is my district, and they know who to contact and who to reach out to. So the idea of
having homes for youth who feel like maybe they don't feel at home anywhere is kind of the approach that we're taking and always will take. Our next house, which we just had a grand opening kind of event, is this house on 4 South and 6 East in Salt Lake City. We just started renovation. It's 2.5 times bigger than Provo. It will have 6 therapy rooms. Instead of 2, each will help us a lot. And we have, we'll have 2 group rooms, and then the entire downstairs will just be for programs. And so I think it's exciting to see all the more we'll be able to do there. This is the little tiny cute house in St. George. It's just a couple blocks from the St. George Temple and ice cream. And so it's going to be really cute when we get it all fixed up. But that we will start renovating and opening as soon as we get Salt Lake running well. The way Encircle stays alive is through what we call call our ambassador program, which is online donations. And it's been really fun to see that we have a lot of people from literally all over the world who send us even $5 a month. And, you know, a lot of people will write in notes on why they do. And that pays for half of the cost of running the Circle program in Provo right now. And so we hope with time to just keep building that. We sell our t-shirts that you guys have probably seen around, and maybe you make $5 to $7 a t-shirt, but it all adds up, and it's also sending a message of love. We also have a program called the For All Pledge, and we're taking that out to businesses, trying to create safe workspaces for these youth as they grow up and enter the job market. And it's based around each business must do four things to be able to put this on the website, because a lot of Utah businesses have a hard time recruiting because people, you know, don't think that they would be a safe workplace. And so it's basically in their hiring practices, being inclusive of all, in benefits, and in the workplace in general, so that everyone feels included and loved. I think after this, we're going to do a video that we is working. It gives you a good feeling of the Circle, but I have to slip out early. Gordon's going to finish, but I do want to leave with kind of one story that I think kind of summarizes what is happening in the Circle. There is a young transgender youth whose name is Keegan, and last November, early December, Keegan got kicked out of his house because he was transgender and wanted to be who he was. He's from Springville, and we know that if a youth gets on the street for more than a few hours, that what can happen to them is horrific and could be life-changing. A lot of these kids will get trafficked or, you know, just there's drug problems, as you can imagine. So we knew that Keegan was in a safe space. Someone in his ward had taken Keegan in. And every day at 2 o'clock, the minute we opened, Keegan's there making cookies, you know, from the time he got kicked out. And so just following Keegan along this journey, you know, it was heartbreaking. But one day we're there, and the police come, and his family wants a restraining order against Keegan so that he can't get close to the house. They don't want their other kids influenced by this bad example. And so over the next, you know, 3 or 4 months, the thoughts I'm having in my head about what kind of parents are these, who would do that? It was about 2 months ago, early May, I think. Jordan and I, Lisa, and a few other people on our staff were sitting in the front room with the door shut, having a meeting, and Keegan was like, pounding on the door, opens the door, and he's like, hey, my dad's coming. But this time, he's not back. He's not bringing the police. It's good. Last night, my dad told me that he wants me to be happy, and he wants to try to understand. And we were just like, wow, that's going to feel so good. That's so great. And so we just shut the doors, went on with our meeting. An hour or so later, I walked into the kitchen, and there's Keegan and his dad making cookies. And Keegan's dad was like this nice, normal guy. You know, I think that people just don't know what to do. And they don't have support. And
My name's Anthony. I'm from Billings, Montana. Our city's about the same size as Provo proper. And we have very little support resources in our community. Pretty much the only thing is United Grace Methodist Church has a Thursday evening rainbow coffee house. And it's been targeted by picketing and graffiti, swastikas, and stuff like that. And we have almost nothing. And so I have people in our community who would gather together to do things like this. And we have young adults like yourself who would do that. But our one of our biggest concerns is, how do you resolve the youth's concerns or the parents' concerns that the very act of going to the house outs you? And that could be dangerous or very difficult. So how do you deal with that?
I don't know if there's one particular answer. I will say that it's really difficult to get kids and parents in the same room at Encircle. We have some kids who go and their parents have no idea. We have some kids whose parents will like run and pull up to the driveway and just like let them roll inside.
I'll say this to you rather than there, because 45 years ago, as editor of Dialogue, I published the first private and personal expression of a gay Latter-day Saint. It was authored anonymous. Yesterday, I ran into this man who 45 years ago wrote his personal story as a gay Latter-day Saint. And he's still anonymous, and there are many people out there who are anonymous. I'm very grateful for people like Stephanie and the people who are involved in the circle, and Bill Bradshaw, with whom I have been working for many years on this issue, as many people have. It is, I've been fortunate to be able to co-author with Caitlin Ryan a pamphlet called Accepting Families, Healthy Children, which is the only really significant research-based study. And one of the things about Caitlin is that she's a Catholic, but she loves Latter-day Saints. And one of the reasons why she's done so much work for the past four decades in Utah is because she recognizes the importance of the Latter-day Saint emphasis on families. We have that emphasis, and yet we have still so much to learn as a community and as families. And part of what we have to learn is that with organizations like this that help do that, we need to support them. The work that Caitlin is doing also really needs support, because it really is helpful, essential to help save lives. And one of the things that Caitlin's research teaches is that all of us can encircle. I can encircle a gay member in my ward, or a transgender person in my neighborhood. And that idea of encircling, which is very much centered on Christ, is what we are all called to do. And with these LGBTQ, whatever the term that we might use for them, are the ones that Christ identifies in the 25th chapter of Matthew as himself. So this work that is being done is really important. The private work that we might do in our own families and communities and congregations is essential, because the number of people who take their lives and the number of people who are kicked out of their homes is still a very serious problem in the Latter-day Saint community. So I'm grateful for the work that these people are doing, and the work that a number of people have been doing for a number of years to try and address this problem.
First of all, I just want to say, as a founding member of Mama Dragons, how touched we have been by what Encircle has done, and how often we refer our mamas who live in Utah to Encircle. I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area, and it's so different there, as you can imagine. All the issues of coming out and parental acceptance, and it's a lot different than Anthony's, you know, description of what's going on where he's at. But as a person who's left Mormonism pretty much over that policy, we walk a fine line of Mama Dragons for sure, because we have mamas coming in droves in all different places. And, you know, I think most of us seasoned Mama Dragons are of the opinion that right now it is only safe for these kids to be out of Mormonism, that that's their best chance to live a happy, successful life, and to just live. I'm wondering about the no sides, only love, and how you guys managed to walk that fine line. I noticed that article in the Trib about quoting Stephanie as saying that she, you know, that accepting the church's money for suicide prevention, as Affirmation did, is, you know, kind of just giving into the whole PR smokescreen that the church tends to want to do, in my opinion, on this stuff. I'm one of those that happens to believe that we shouldn't be accepting money to fix a problem that the church is causing. And I'm pretty outspoken about that. But I noticed that there was a bit of a retraction on that statement, and, you know, it's not important to me whether she was misquoted or not, but it just brings up again that fine line that we all walk in Mama Dragons and in Circle, with not alienating these people who still cling to their Mormonism, and yet try to gently bring particularly these parents along to the idea that until the guys in the church office building get their act together and start changing doctrine to accept these kids, that Mormonism is not a safe place for these children. And I'm pretty much in awe about how you guys walk that line. And I understand, as a Mama Dragon, how difficult that is. So I just wondered if you could speak to that, how you keep that no sides only love thing going, and you know, be able to expand your reach by doing that, and yet help these families understand that their best bet is to not force these kids to go to church and participate.
And maybe you keep your family together. child won't feel the need to take their own life away. As far as Stephanie's comment, I think that, you know, we all have personal feelings. We all, I mean, I'm here with the circle, but we're all human beings, right? I'm no longer an active member of the church either. But as an encircle representative,